So with that introductory reading, I now call forth Matthew.
Well, thanks, Paul, and good evening, everyone. Thanks for joining us tonight. So our task for tonight is to consider and answer this question. And this topic was put on our schedule, not sure when, I guess before the schedule was printed. And I didn't choose the topic. Somebody chose it. Perhaps it's one of you in the audience. I don't know. But I found it interesting, and so I put my name next to it and thought that's an interesting question to look into. So that's our task for this evening. And like a lot of biblical concepts, the Sabbath runs from beginning to end. And I think that the more we look for it and the more we're open to seeing patterns in the Word of God, the more we'll see these things coming up again and again. And so I've got to find my cursor, sorry. It's somewhere lost between the two screens. There it is. Now I can adjust my notes. So the introductory reading that we had in Matthew 12 has a lot in it about the Sabbath, specifically in the time of Jesus' ministry. And we could go to a reading like this and answer the question, but we'd only be looking at one spot in the Bible, and some people might choose a verse or a chapter in the Bible, and they'd say, well, there it is in the Bible, we've answered the question. But I think there's a lot more to it than that. And so to begin to answer our question at this time, I would suggest starting at the beginning to gather some more information about the Sabbath and answer some other questions about its significance before we answer our main question this evening. So when looking into a subject in the Bible, this can often be a good place to start, looking at the first and last uses of a word or a concept in the scriptures. The first and last cases often contain important pieces to understand and see the puzzle that we're trying to work out. And so we'll look at these first and last occurrences of the Sabbath through our considerations tonight. And the Strong's Concordance numbers are there included for your interest, but we won't be delving into word meanings tonight. So the first occurrence is there in Exodus 16, verse 23, and we'll get to that one shortly. The first New Testament occurrence of the Sabbath is from our reading in Matthew 12. The last occurrence in the Old Testament is from Amos chapter 8, verse 5. And the last New Testament occurrence of the word is from Colossians 2. So how do we go about answering this overall question? Well, first, I think we need to look at a range of scriptures from a lot of different books in the Bible and places, and answer some of these other questions before we can answer the main one. So what is the Sabbath? I think we need to have an understanding of what it is before we can say whether we need to be keeping it today in our modern age or not. Who was involved with establishing the Sabbath and keeping it? Where was it necessary? When was it observed? And why did God command to do it, to keep the Sabbath? And so if we already believe that God exists and that his word, the Bible, is the guide to life now and to life in the future, then I think we can learn and apply important lessons to our lives from this subject. But also, what if we're someone listening to these things about this subject and we aren't even sure if we believe in God or the authenticity of the Bible? Well, I believe that this subject of the Sabbath and the spiritual lessons and principles it contains for our modern lives are still relevant. and add to and build up the truthfulness of the Bible as the inspired word of the living and active God of the universe. So these questions that we have, especially asking why God does something like command the observance of the Sabbath, brings into the mix asking why God does anything at all, especially things that relate to us as human beings and his creation. Does he do and expect things purely for his own enjoyment? He is not like a man. He exists and operates on a spiritual plane higher than that of mortal beings. He says these things about the difference between his nature and ours in the prophecy of Isaiah, where it says in Isaiah 55:8, "For my thoughts are not your thoughts, neither are your ways my ways, saith the Lord. For as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts." So why does God command and expect certain actions and responses from his creation? Is he looking to see something else from us, something more than robotic movement and ritualistic observance, as we have the ability of free choice? So then let's start at the beginning, right back in Genesis chapter 1, and we'll consider the pattern of the 6 + 1 days of creation, the 7 days of creation. And so if we go back to Genesis chapter 1, right at verse 1, and then at the end of chapter 1 and the beginning of chapter 2, we'll read about an occurrence of what I think is a Sabbath pattern before the commandment given to keep the Sabbath in Exodus chapter 20. So right back to Genesis 1 verse 1. "In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth." If we jump to the end of chapter 1, in verse 31, and read right into the first couple verses of chapter 2, it says, "And God saw every living thing that he made, and behold, it was very good. And the evening and the morning were the sixth day. Thus the heavens and the earth were finished, and all the host of them. And on the seventh day, God ended his work which he had made, and he rested on the seventh day from all his work which he had made. And God blessed the seventh day and sanctified it, because that in it he had rested from all his work which God created and made." So as I've said already, like many Bible subjects, I think it's often important to start at the beginning of the Bible to begin to understand how God is introducing a law or command or principle that has bearing on our lives. So we won't take the time to read all of the creation account, obviously, but we would see that God created certain things on each of the 6 days. And when we come then to verse 31 and the first few verses of chapter 2, we learn that God does something different and special with the seventh day. Note that the language used to describe the creative acts of the 6 days deem things to be good and very good. But the seventh day was blessed and sanctified because of the rest and the ceasing of the creative work. So I think that right off the first chapter of the Bible, God is trying to tell us something here, that while all the days contained amazing and wonderful things that were happening, the seventh day, or the rest day, is set apart from the others in a manner that I think, as we'll see as we continue, establishes a pattern of this special day. And so then the question might arise that did God need to rest? He established a pattern and a principle to follow and to look for. So we turn then next to Exodus chapter 16. We will find the first occurrence of the actual Sabbath word used. And this again is before the actual giving of the Ten Commandments and the command to keep the Sabbath day. So Exodus chapter 16 and verse 23 is where we find it. We'll start in verse 22. And it came to pass that on the sixth day they gathered twice as much bread, two omers for one man, and all the rulers of the congregation came and told Moses. And he said unto them, This is that which the Lord hath said, Tomorrow is the rest of the holy Sabbath unto the Lord. Bake that which ye will bake today, and seethe that ye will seethe, and that which remaineth over lay up for you to be kept until the morning. And they laid it up till the morning, as Moses bade, and it did not stink, neither was there any worm therein. And Moses said, Eat that today, for today is a Sabbath unto the Lord. Today ye shall not find it in the field. 6 days ye shall gather it, but on the seventh day, which is the Sabbath, in it there shall be none. And it came to pass that there went out some of the people on the seventh day for to gather, and they found none. And the Lord said unto Moses, How long refuse ye to keep my commandments and my laws? See, for that the Lord hath given you the Sabbath, therefore he giveth you on the sixth day the bread of 2 days. Abide ye every man in his place, let no man go out of his place on the seventh day. So the people rested on the seventh day. So God, after delivering the children of Israel from the land of Egypt and from under the hand of Pharaoh and his taskmasters, provides the people as they wander around in the wilderness the bread and sustenance they call manna. And this too is God establishing the principle of 6 days plus one, where the seventh is special and set apart. And this again is happening before the giving of the Ten Commandments, as I said, in which the observance of the Sabbath day is outlined in the fourth commandment. And so we'll continue to look at some more passages as we continue through the scripture. But I'll just mention at this point too that the pattern of the Sabbath, I think, flows from Genesis to Revelation. And if we could take much more time than we have tonight, we could see in greater detail the picture of this Sabbath, this seventh day, and its pattern in the plan of God from the beginning to end in his inspired book. Nevertheless, we'll try to gain as broad a view as we can of this special appointed day. So over a few chapters then, in Exodus 20, we come to the giving of the Ten Commandments to Moses. So beginning there in chapter 20 and verse 1. And God spake all these words, saying, I am the Lord thy God, which have brought thee out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. Thou shalt have no other gods before me. Thou shalt not make unto thee any graven image, or any likeness of anything that is in the heaven above, or that is in the earth beneath, or that is in the water under the earth. Thou shalt not bow down thyself to them, nor serve them. For I, the Lord thy God, am a jealous God, visiting the iniquity of the fathers upon the children unto the third and fourth generation of them that hate me, and showing mercy unto thousands of them that love me and keep my commandments. Thou shalt not take the name of the Lord thy God in vain, for the Lord will not hold him guiltless that taketh his name in vain. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days shalt thou labor and do all thy work, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Lord thy God. In it thou shalt not do any work, thou nor thy son, nor thy daughter, thy manservant, nor thy maidservant, nor thy cattle, nor thy stranger that is within thy gates. For in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, the sea and all that in them is, and rested the seventh day. Wherefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and hallowed it. And so, the keeping of the Sabbath then, given as one of the 10 vital specific commands, written with the finger of God on 2 slabs of stone, as we are told, to be remembered and followed by all who would seek to worship the God of heaven and earth, the first 4 commands concern the relationship between people and God. And the following 6 commands concern the relationships of people with people. The keeping of the Sabbath day, then, in Old Testament times, is clearly an important and vital part of the life of a believer in the God of Israel, the God of the Bible. But that was a long, long time ago, right? What about now? Well, we're working towards that answer to the question that we have. Let's come over to Leviticus chapter 25, and this is a section which I had included from a talk a couple of months ago, which just happened to be on the same topic. And this is regarding the Sabbath for the land. So Leviticus 25. So after a period of time of about 40 years of wandering in the wilderness, after being led out of that land of Egypt by God's servant and representative Moses, the children of Israel were brought into the land that God had promised he would lead them to. They had been living for years now with the Ten Commandments and the Sabbath law, and had experience with the cycle of the manna gathering, as we've briefly explored already. So forward here in Leviticus 25, we'll see God is instructing Moses to take his word to the people concerning the law and the pattern of the Sabbath of the seventh year and of the Jubilee year. Let's just read the first five verses there first. Leviticus 25. And the Lord spake unto Moses in Mount Sinai, saying, Speak unto the children of Israel, and say unto them, When ye come into the land which I give you, then shall the land keep a Sabbath unto the Lord. 6 years thou shalt sow thy field, and 6 years thou shalt prune thy vineyard, and gather in the fruit thereof. But in the seventh year shall be a Sabbath of rest unto the land, a Sabbath for the Lord. Thou shalt neither sow thy field nor prune thy vineyard. That which groweth of its own accord of thy harvest thou shalt not reap, neither gather the grapes of thy vine undressed, for it is a year of rest unto the land. So not only were the people of God to keep a weekly Sabbath in terms of their work and use of time, but the land itself that God gave them was also to keep a Sabbath to the Lord. So then another question arises. What did the people learn from the time periods of leaving the land untended? Didn't they completely depend on the land's production to survive? And the practical benefits of leaving the land and the soil to its own natural cycles for an entire year, every 7 years, is something I don't have much experience with. However, I'm sure those of you who are more skilled and knowledgeable in gardening and land management will be able to think of perhaps some practical reasons for allowing the growing fields an opportunity to rest and potentially return to some sort of better state for the following year's planting and growing season. And so if you were a farmer in those times and you were prudent to grow and save enough to sustain you and your household in the sixth year, what might you do with the time in the seventh year when planting and harvesting seasons were on hiatus? What was God expecting the people to do during the Sabbath rest when much of the work for the year was put on pause? And then, on top of the seven-year cycle, every 50 years, there was the year of Jubilee, when any transactions involving land ownership reverted to the original family owner. And this assured, amongst other things, that all people of the nation would have an opportunity to prosper and continue to take part in the gift of the promised land, and that poverty of some individuals or families would not be perpetuated from generation to generation because of poor decisions or the cause and effect of unfavorable weather or failing crops. Verse 23 of chapter 25 there says, The land shall not be sold forever, for the land is mine, for ye are strangers and sojourners with me. And so God's command is there to the people. The lesson had to be learned that land ownership was temporary, in any case, in this present life. But the people of Israel and their forefathers had been promised an eternal promise, not a temporary one. So the thinking mind would tend to expect something in the future that would be eternal and sure. And Micah 4 verse 4 says, "But they shall sit every man under his vine and under his fig tree, and none shall make them afraid, for the mouth of the Lord of hosts hath spoken it." So we learn from Leviticus 25 that they came into the promised land, they were to farm and garden and vine dress for 6 years, and then in the seventh year let the land be. And further to this, there was the 50th year of Jubilee, if we just read verses 8 to 13 as well. "And thou shalt number 7 Sabbaths of years unto thee, 7 times 7 years, and the space of the 7 Sabbaths of years shall be unto thee 49 years. Then shalt thou cause the trumpet of the Jubilee to sound on the 10th day of the 7th month. In the Day of Atonement shall ye make the trumpet sound throughout all your land. And ye shall hallow the 50th year, and proclaim liberty throughout all the land unto all the inhabitants thereof. It shall be a jubilee unto you, and ye shall return every man unto his possession, and ye shall return every man unto his family. A jubilee shall that 50th year be unto you. Ye shall not sow, neither reap that which groweth of itself in it, nor gather the grapes in it of thy vine undressed. For it is the jubilee. It shall be holy unto you. Ye shall eat the increase thereof out of the field. In the year of this jubilee ye shall return every man unto his possession." And so every 7 Sabbath cycles, there was another special year where not only was the land left to rest, but if there were any exchanges of land, it reverted back to the original family ownership. And if we needed any further clarification on the process, God gives it in verses 20 to 23. "And if ye shall say, what shall we eat the 7th year? Behold, we shall not sow nor gather in our increase. Then I will command my blessing upon you in the 6th year, and it shall bring forth fruit for 3 years. And ye shall sow the 8th year, and eat yet of old fruit until the 9th year. Until her fruits come in, ye shall eat of the old store. The land shall not be sold forever, for the land is mine, for ye are strangers and sojourners with me." So those then who were going to adhere to this command and this cycle of life would need a good measure of faith. This taught the people, amongst other things, that they were dependent on God to provide them food from the ground, even when untended, and that the land itself ultimately did not belong to them. It was God's to give them in the first place. And so compare in your minds for a moment, adhering to this cycle of Sabbath rest for the land, to the collecting of manna, which we looked at in Exodus 16. It took a measure of faith to gather only what was necessary for each day, and that God would provide enough on the 6th day for the 7th as well. If you and I were completely dependent on what we could personally grow throughout the year to sustain ourselves and our families, it would require, I can imagine, a great deal of faith to leave the land to its natural cycles of growth and decay. And God's promise is to his people when they listen to him and trust in him, in verses 18 and 19. "Wherefore ye shall do my statutes and keep my judgments and do them, and ye shall dwell in the land in safety. And the land shall yield her fruit, and ye shall eat your fill, and dwell therein in safety." And so at this point, here are some other passages of note that I'll just mention. We won't go in depth into these, but I found these to be interesting passages in the Bible on the subject of the Sabbath. So Exodus 24, verse 16 is interesting. It talks about 6 days and the 7th, the glory of the Lord abode upon Mount Sinai, and the cloud covered it 6 days, and the 7th day he called unto Moses out of the midst of the cloud. So there's a period of 6 days of silence from God, and then the seventh day he speaks with Moses. Joshua 6, verse 3. If we look at numbers in the Bible, six is the number of man, and seven is the number of completeness, or perfectness, perfection. A spiritually higher representative number. And in Joshua 6, verse 3, it says there, "And ye shall compass the city, all ye men of war, and go round about the city once. Thus shalt thou do 6 days. The city of Jericho was encircled for 6 days, representing man's work. And on the seventh, God brings miraculous judgment." It was the seventh day that the walls came tumbling down. Ezekiel 46 is another interesting reference to 6 days. It talks about the gate of the inner court of the temple and Ezekiel's vision of the temple that looketh toward the east, to be shut for 6 working days, but on the Sabbath it shall be opened. And in the day of the new moon it shall be opened. Isaiah 66:23 talks about new moons and Sabbaths being observed and restored in the future. And Psalm 92 is a psalm or song for the Sabbath day. "It is a good thing to give thanks unto the Lord and to sing praises unto thy name, O Most High." And so if we looked at the focus of the words of Psalm or Song 92, it talks about the works of God's hands, the goodness of God, the righteous endure and grow, and the wicked scatter and diminish. Okay, so let's come to the New Testament then, and we'll take a look at our reading for tonight, Matthew 12, along with the gospel record from Mark chapter 2. And so from that reading, we had the Sabbath mentioned a few times, and we had a phrase or a part of a verse that read, "The Sabbath is made for man and not man for the Sabbath." What does that mean? That one comes from Mark 2, verse 27, which is the parallel account, and that verse is in Mark 2, 27. "The Sabbath made for man and not man for the Sabbath." And so I think that is helping mankind to realize their priorities and the weightier matters rather than keeping the letter of the law. The parallel gospel record to our reading in Matthew 12 is what Mark 2 is. And so the verse in Matthew 12 at verse 7, it says there, "But if ye had known what this meaneth, I will have mercy and not sacrifice, ye would not have condemned the guiltless." And so Mark 2 has this verse that Matthew's gospel does not contain. The Sabbath was made for man and not man for the Sabbath. And Matthew's gospel record has this verse about mercy and not sacrifice, where Mark does not have those words. So I think one of the things we learn from this is that mercy and sacrifice are linked with what Jesus is saying here on the subject of the Sabbath, which we had read from Matthew 12. And this verse is cited by him from Hosea 6, verse 6, which says, "For I desired mercy and not sacrifice, and the knowledge of God more than burnt offerings." God did command many types of sacrifices to be made by the followers of his law, but what he really wanted to see was a change in character to show mercy, like he is merciful. And then the next verse in Matthew 12 and at verse 8, "For the Son of Man is Lord even of the Sabbath day." If we looked at the context of the preceding and surrounding verses and the chapter, Jesus had authority to work on the Sabbath day if the work was beneficial to his purpose, ministry, and mission, and brought glory to God. And so what does it mean then that Jesus is Lord of the Sabbath? Well, remember so far what we've learned about what the Sabbath is. It's the cessation from our regular human physical work to focus on God and spiritually higher thoughts and principles. Remember that the Sabbath was made for mankind, and if Jesus is Lord of this day, he is the preeminent human, the Son of God, and the pinnacle of mankind, born of a woman and also born of the Holy Spirit power of God. He, Jesus, then, is the preeminent of this special day, just as he perfected and completed all of the commandments in that he never committed a sin in mind or body. And so then, thinking about the Mosaic Sabbath under the law and Jesus Christ, do we keep the Mosaic Sabbath along with the rest of the Mosaic law now, since Jesus has appeared the first time? The New Testament repeats in a number of places that the law was fulfilled in Christ. In Romans 10 verse 4, 2 Corinthians 3, 11 to 14, and Galatians 3, 24 and 25. And he gave us the guide to life encapsulated in the two great commandments he gave in response to the lawyer's question in Matthew 22, verse 34 to 40. Let's just flip over to that one. Matthew 22, verse 34 to 40. Jesus is confronted by this lawyer and asked a question. Matthew 22, starting at verse 34. But when the Pharisees had heard that he had put the Sadducees to silence, they were gathered together. Then one of them, which was a lawyer, asked him a question, tempting him and saying, Master, which is the great commandment in the law? Jesus said unto him, Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart and with all thy soul and with all thy mind. This is the first and great commandment, and the second is like unto it. Thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. On these two commandments hang all the law and the prophets. And so if Jesus has taken all the law and prophets and encapsulated them in these two great commandments, including the command to keep the Sabbath, then what have we to say? Jesus is the fulfillment of the law and prophets, and that the Old Testament was a shadow of him who was to come after, where does the spirit and principle of what the Sabbath taught us fit in? Do we keep the spirit of the Sabbath? Do we keep it once a week? Do we keep it every day? Or how often, if at all? And then there are a number of verses there on the screen of examples of Jesus working and healing on the Sabbath day, and rebuking the spiritual leaders for their hypocrisy in matters of Sabbath observance and personal exception. And I'll leave those for your notes if you're interested. We won't be looking those for sake of time tonight. So, benefits of the Sabbath. The Sabbath had benefits and reasons for keeping this humanly unnatural. What I mean by that is, I don't think we would naturally come up with the idea of the Sabbath. We might come up with the idea of other commands, like we've got to treat each other reasonably well. It's not good to murder someone or to lie or to steal. And so we might come up with other commands, but the command of the Sabbath probably wouldn't be something that we as humans would just come up with, that we should work for 6 days and then take a day off to focus on other things. We'd probably just want to be the most efficient and continue working and getting the most that we can get out of life. And so this God-designed cycle of one day and seven focused attention in other directions. Other commands we might naturally come to by conclusion, as I've said. The consequences and fallout from such actions in society, such as murder and stealing and lying, even societies that don't believe in God or a supreme being are generally very negative and apparent. And so here's a short list of and incomplete of benefits, I think, from the Sabbath observance. So practicality, rest from physical work, toil, and labor, refreshing the body and mind by refraining from the usual tasks and focusing on something else, thinking deeply, meditating on spiritual things, things unseen rather than the physical world and familiar things around. Secondly, spirituality, elevating the mind to try to think on the level of the Creator, to ponder the divine. Themes of positivity and contentedness come out from keeping a regular Sabbath as part of life. And Isaiah 58:13-14 talks about calling the Sabbath a delight and delighting thyself in the Lord, delighting ourselves in the Lord. Thirdly, another benefit of the Sabbath is that it's assigned to others. Exodus 31:13-17 has some strong language regarding death as the penalty for defiling the day, the Sabbath day that was supposed to be holy and set apart. And it was, of course, placed among the Ten Commandments as a vital part of life. Clearly, God designed it as an unquestionable part of the cycle of time and life of a believer. And Ezekiel 20, verse 12 and 20 says, or talks about God giving them Sabbaths to be a sign between me and them. Sabbath is also tied to creation, which we've talked about tonight already. We considered the beginning of the Bible, the account of creation, and how the structure of 6 days plus one carries through into the Sabbath commandment. The Sabbath of rest for men and women to observe is linked with the pattern of Almighty God's creative work through his angels in 6 days and their rest on the seventh. And finally, in this list, incomplete at least, the Sabbath is also a reminder of deliverance. The nation of Israel was delivered from the oppression of the Egyptian powerhouse, and the Sabbath day cycle became a memorial to them. Deuteronomy 5:15 says, "And remember that thou wast a servant in the land of Egypt, and that the Lord thy God brought thee out thence through a mighty hand and by a stretched out arm. Therefore the Lord thy God commanded thee to keep the Sabbath day." And so then, if we sort of change gears a little bit and think about living the spirit of the Sabbath, it's all about choosing to do it God's way and not our own way, living it and loving it. And that the verse that I mentioned on the last slide, Isaiah 58:13, talks about delight in the Lord, and there's a couple of others there on the screen. Isaiah 58:13 says, "If you turn back your foot from the Sabbath, from doing your pleasure on my holy day, and call the Sabbath a delight, and the holy day of the Lord honorable, if you honor it, not going your own ways, or seeking your own pleasure, or talking idly, then you shall take delight in the Lord, and I will make you ride on the heights of the earth. I will feed you with the heritage of Jacob, your father, for the mouth of the Lord has spoken." Isaiah 61:10-11 say, "I will greatly rejoice in the Lord. My soul shall be joyful in my God, for he hath clothed me with the garments of salvation. He hath covered me with the robe of righteousness, as a bridegroom decketh himself with ornaments, and as a bride adorneth herself with her jewels. For as the earth bringeth forth her bud, and as the garden causeth the things that are sown in it to spring forth, so the Lord will cause righteousness and praise to spring forth before all the nations." And Psalm 37, verse 4 and 11, talk about God giving us all things, and that true peace is from him. Verse 4 says, Delight thyself also in the Lord, and he shall give thee the desires of thine heart. And verse 11 says, but the meek shall inherit the earth and shall delight themselves in the abundance of peace. And so near the beginning of our time tonight, we talked about the first and last uses of a word in the Bible and how that's a good place to go when looking at a subject or a theme or a concept. And so here are the final two in Amos 8, verse 5. And we'll just turn there and actually read a couple of the surrounding verses. As long as I can find it, I'm almost there. It's a little prophecy near the end of the Old Testament there. So Amos 8 and starting at verse 4. Hear this, O ye that swallow up the needy, even to make the poor of the land to fail, saying, when will the new moon be gone, and that we may sell corn, and the Sabbath, that we may set forth wheat, making the ephah small and the shekel great, and falsifying the balances by deceit, that we may buy the poor for silver and the needy for a pair of shoes, yea, and sell the refuse of the wheat. The Lord hath sworn by the excellency of Jacob, surely I will never forget any of their works. And so there were those at that time that held this view of the Sabbath, is it over yet? When is the day going to be done so I can get back to the work that I really want to be doing? Making money, improving myself, getting more is the focus of this person's mindset. And then the final one in Colossians 2, verse 16, the final use of the Sabbath in the New Testament, Colossians 2, 16 says, let no man therefore judge you in meat or in drink or in respect of an holy day or of the new moon or of the Sabbath days, which are a shadow of things to come, but the body is of Christ. And so the Apostle Paul's letter to the church in Colossae, he's saying, don't worry about what others think about your service to God. These things, including the Sabbath day, are shadows. They are foreshadowings of what Jesus Christ is going to show and teach and bring to us. The Sabbath is an outline, like a person's shadow on the ground, but not the real thing, in that it teaches something about the real thing. But then when you can see the real, why would you look at the shadow for the full picture? So at this point, where are we in terms of answering our main question and our task for this evening? Is keeping the Sabbath required? Well, I believe it is, but perhaps not in the way we might have thought before. Maybe even a bit different to how we thought about it earlier tonight. Because of the work of Jesus in fulfilling the law and the prophets, the way we keep the Sabbath today is in a spiritual sense and not in the constraint of a law or checklist of rules. The Sabbath is very much a God-designed pattern that he wants his creation, including you and me, to be a part of. And there will come a time when all people will know the God of the Bible as the true and living God, and the Sabbath will again have a part to play in that future age. The pattern of the Sabbath is part of God's plan and purpose with the earth, all of his creation, and us. It's tied to the rest, or Sabbath rest, of God's kingdom and the seventh millennium. Habakkuk 2:14 says, for the earth shall be filled with the knowledge of the glory of the Lord as the waters cover the sea. And Isaiah 66, 22 and 23 say, for as the new heavens and the new earth, which I will make, shall remain before me, saith the Lord, so shall your seed and your name remain. And it shall come to pass that from one new moon to another and from one Sabbath to another shall all flesh come to worship before me, saith the Lord. And so God is offering us all an opportunity to be part of his plan with the earth. It's up to us whether we want to answer that call and be there. Thank you.